You ever lie awake at night, thinking what your lives and your children's lives may be? I know I do. There have been times I think I've felt utterly lost and vulnerable. For average people, life is neither static nor predictable. You know, working as a hospital chaplain, I trained as a community minister first, and I worked as a spiritual care provider in hospitals in different settings. Working as a hospital chaplain, I've journeyed with thousands of people, ordinary people with regular lives and routines, who, many of which, found themselves quite suddenly shaken by physical, emotional, and spiritual traumas. And these instilled in them anxiety, fear, and even existential angst. Author Anne Lamott asks, where do we even begin in the presence of evil or catastrophe, dead or deeply lost children, a young wife's melanoma, polar bears floating out to sea on scraps of ice? What is the point of it all when we experience the vortex of interminable depression? Or conversely, when we recognize that time is tearing past us like giddy greyhounds? In both my ministry training and supervised clinical experience, both of these revolve to a significant degree around one particular theme, and that is integration. The process of becoming aware of our own stuff, the life experiences and influences past and present that make us who we are, define our worldview, and shape the spiritual, ethical, and religious values that we choose to follow. And all of these play a role in determining how we behave and how we interact with others in a complex world. It's not easy to examine oneself deeply or to recognize how we really are or notice the emotional wake we may leave behind us as we sail the choppy waters of the seas of relationship. Ultimately, we simply cannot resist the evolution of ourselves, even though we may wallow in confusion for years, trying to figure ourselves out as we look for meaning, purpose, and seek a community where connection is possible. Lamott writes, one rarely knows where to begin the search for meaning, though by necessity we can only begin where we are. So think about where you are now in your lives and ask yourself, how do I survive tough times? What resources do you have? What tools do you have? Which ones do you need? And just maybe as important, once you figure out how to survive, what do you need to thrive spiritually? My father, he fancied himself a carpenter, a plumber, and an all-round Mr. Fix-It. Though, and sometimes he did get it right. But really, truth be told, he had no clue what he was doing half the time. Faced with a major household problem that requires the kind of expertise beyond one's amateur skill set, the average Joe calls for help. Well, my dad's name was Joe, but he was far from average. And no matter how bad the situation, broken water pipes, sizzling electric wires, or the roof half blown off, my dad would stubbornly insist on trying to do it himself. At least to the point where he would have made 100 trips to the hardware store in Canada, Canadian Tire, here it's something else, I'm sure. Spent a lot of money, made a big mess, and aggravated my mother to tears. Only then might he grudgingly phone a contractor so we could have water or power on again. He loved his tools, my dad, and he would buy them by, you know, he had hundreds of them, all types, fancy ones, expensive ones, and stuff that was so complex he didn't know how to use. In the world of home repairs, one can't handle every job with the same tool, and every tool is not suited to every person. And likewise, in our unpredictable, uncontrolled world, there's no universal jaws of life with which to extricate ourselves from the wreckage or trauma and struggle and disaster that potentially awaits us. The solutions for coping with life's daunting challenges, the what that make us feel adrift and feel vulnerable, are not one size fits all. In tough times and vulnerable moments, I think it's kind of useful to have some practical spiritual tools and a variety of them. So today I want to bring an A to Z assortment of spiritual tools to help us survive and thrive. There are, of course, many more options than the 26 letters of the alphabet and our time today allow. But so consider this a starter kit that you can modify and personalize for your individual and unique circumstances. Some of these you will be familiar with, others less so, but I think we can all stand to upgrade our toolbox from time to time. So let us begin. Affirmations. We have to take time to name and remind ourselves of the ways we are good and worthy beings. Affirming ourselves and others is a powerful way to enhance self-esteem, pride, and confidence. If we feel worthy of love and affection and feel capable of showing love and compassion to others, we nurture a formidable resource that will help us through hard times. Breath. In times of crisis and trauma or stress, our bodies go into overdrive. Hormones stimulate a flight or fight response, increase our blood pressure and heart rate, and sometimes cause symptoms like shakiness, dizziness, nausea, sweatiness, dry mouth, cause us to hyperventilate, and so on. And a lot of this energy in those times of trauma and crisis can be diffused by simply stopping to breathe deeply and relax. And sometimes, I think, if we just take a moment and a few extra breaths, we create a buffer. The space, the time we need to keep us or hold us from reactively speaking harmful and regrettable words or hitting send on that email that will hurt people with our words. C, creativity. For some, troubling emotions can be tempered and processed, eased through with a creative process, a reflective process. Whether it's painting or sculpting, gardening, carpentry, whatever medium calls you most. And by co-creating, if we create with others, we have a dynamic relational process going on that process theologians suggest is a medium by which we experience deepest sacred meaning. Dedication. Making a commitment, showing up, and following through. Dedication is a way of declaring one's allegiance, love, and hopes for something beyond oneself. Through discernment, another D, we reflect and choose and stand by that which we have to which we have committed. Though to achieve balance in our lives, to be able to honor the commitments we make, we must mindfully limit the number of commitments we make and learn how to say no to opportunities and demands that call us in 1,000 directions. Exercise, walking, hiking, swimming. Physical exercise helps dissipate nervous energy and relieves the stressed body. Exercise increases our capacity for mental focus, makes it easier to problem solve and to reflect on solutions and choices available. Some Unitarian Universalist churches use a kind of a triad model for their religious education programs in which children move through three different learning experiences or areas each Sunday. There's the mind and thinking area, the body, moving area, and the spirit feeling area. Forgiveness. Sometimes we internalize anger and hostile feelings, and we spend a lot of time and mental energy replaying tracks of past experiences and frustrating relationships. I could have done this, could have, would have said, done or said that. This happened to me yesterday. I had quite the harrowing experience with a certain airline, starts with A, ends in A. But really, by intentionally working to let go of anger, frustration, and our hostile emotions about ourselves and other people and situations we have no control over anyways, we clear space that allows a gentler, more compassionate, loving approach. Gratitude. If we can regularly name the things that we're grateful for, I think we exponentially combat that encroaching feelings of despair and hopelessness. If every day we name something or someone that has brought us comfort or contentment, simple things perhaps like the recollection of a stranger's smile, the view you admire from your balcony, or hearing that sweet bird song, receiving that unexpected phone call from an old friend. However you name the things you are grateful for, remember that it's impossible to feel both grateful and sorry for oneself in the same moment. Hospitality. The conditions of sadness and deep loneliness often result in building walls of social isolation. And one way to push back is to invite a friend or two into our lives, if only for a cup of coffee. The act of welcoming others into our home and serving food or drink is an age-old spiritual practice that reflects generosity and caring. It also forces us out of our ratty bathrobes and our own dark headspaces. There's no better way to build relationship than over a shared meal. And I think if you churches stop the practice of coffee hour, our movement might well collapse. Just saying. Intentionality, mindfulness, or awareness. Taking time to notice our environment is to invite awe, beauty into our lives. We need sometimes to drop our frenzied multitasking ways and for a while devote our senses to a single silent action or activity. And maybe that activity is journaling, writing about one's deep thoughts, questions, hopes, and disappointments. This spiritual reflective process is wonderful for our development. Even making a pro and con list can help identify options and choices and how we make decisions. Regular journaling gives us a bonus. It's a record of our personal progress, our maturation and spiritual growth, not to mention a source to help clarify the facts and details that fade as our memories dim. Kindness. Doing kind acts for other beings, whether it's volunteering or serving people in need, can help relieve the narrow focus we have on our own lives and our own vulnerabilities. Practicing empathy or putting ourselves in another person's shoes without judging or diagnosing or trying to fix them reflects how we desire to be treated ourselves. L for labyrinth, or prayer, meditation, chanting, and all the spiritual practices available. These are a way to reflect our inner spirituality intentionally. For some, these practices are mediums by which to connect to God or goddess, the sacred. Humanists might identify with Unitarian theologian James Luther Adams' claim that God is, quote, the ultimate commanding, sustaining reality which transforms all existence. Music. The power of music to transport, to lift up, or to get us dancing earns a place as a primary spiritual tool. Whether you make music or revel in the sound of others singing or playing instruments, music is a way that connects body and spirit. For some, music helps in achieving transcendent states. For others, music expresses personal values and emotions. It's a way to document and reflect on social justice issues. Think of Pete Seeger. Nature. Our interaction and interconnection in that great web of all existence, whether it's walking in the forest, paddling a canoe, or chaining oneself to a tree as an action for Earth justice against pillagers of the planet, these are variations on one spiritual tool. Others, reaching out to other people, to friends, reconnecting with family, recognizing when we need support and doing something about it, whether it's joining a support group or going to a reputable professional. We need others in our life. Pilgrimage, long and arduous, perhaps like walking the Camino de Santiago trail in Spain, or simple, intentional, a little focused walk in a neighborhood park. Pilgrimage is a methodical journeying of significance in search of moral and existential guidance. It can be used to have some of the time we can do it collectively as a pilgrimage in the form of congregational or leadership retreats, or we can have occasions in community to seek new directions for rejuvenation. Excuse me. Q for questions. The poet Rilke told us to love the questions themselves and live the questions now. Unitarian Universalism is a religion with no creed and makes no absolute truth claims. However, we are called to wrestle and explore questions, to consider diverse perspectives, to struggle together, to make informed decisions and take actions through our democratic process. Revelry. Fun for fun's sake, playing for the joy of it, not for competition or production or accomplishment. Research reveals that revelry is one of the characteristics observed in our breakthrough congregations, and these are the ones which experience significant rapid growth, the people who can play together just for the fun of it. Silence. When cell phones, computers, or other electronic screens finally go dark and quiet, when there's no talking, texting, tweeting, music, or televisions or noisy appliances running, only then can we be aware of the beating of our own hearts and drawing of breath. This creates space for our universe to unfold. Theology. Part of the spiritual journey is discerning our beliefs. As Unitarian Universalists, we are quick to lift up our pluralistic openness, although I don't think we do a lot of deep exploring of where we fall on the spectrum of belief. How do you make sense of evil deeds, atrocities, and suffering in the world in light of our Unitarian Universalist principles about inherent worth and dignity, equality, and radical inclusivity? Do you even have an elevator speech prepared? A clear response when that stranger or person on the airplane next to you says, "What is Unitarian Universalism?" or "What do Unitarians believe?" You, Unitarian Universalist community. I believe religion and faith are supposed to make us better people who live better lives, and Unitarian Universalism can do just that. In our communities, members and friends come seeking different things: companionship, meaning, inspiration, purpose, support, laughter, commitment, knowledge, guidance, music, a place to belong. For some of us, it's values. How can we live our faith in a way that aligns with our values and principles? It's not always easy, especially when we encounter dissonant situations and diverse worldviews and conflicting ideologies. But instead of digging in and creating silos or remaining isolated with our liberal views and rejecting or minimalizing all that we do not believe or whomever we don't agree with, what if we met others in the space between our divergent views and perspectives? a place that theologian Henry Nelson Wieman claims is, quote, where creative interchange happens and true transformation becomes possible. Wisdom, wisdom of elders, prophets, and strangers. The Buddha is thought to have said, when the pupil is ready, the teacher will appear. What would it mean for you to be ready when your teacher appears? What will your teacher look like? Are you limiting yourself with preconceived ideas of who those teachers must be or how they should look or sound? Xenophobia. The letter X doesn't bring many spiritual tools to mind, but the word xenophobia, meaning hatred or fear of persons of a different nationality or ethnicity than one's own, can be a reminder. As Unitarian Universalists, we are quick to condemn xenophobia and all the prejudices, bigotry, racism, and other isms that oppress groups of people. So let the word xenophobia remind us of the privilege we hold by virtue of skin color or cultural roots or religious identity, economic status, education, age, ability, gender identity, or sexual preference. We cannot alter the facts of our privilege, but we can strive to be more aware of it and try to understand and combat our role, the role our privilege plays in perpetuating oppressive systems. Yoga, a Hindu method of learning that includes exercises, breathing, sequences, and meditation. Yoga is designed to aid in enlightenment. In the West, many people practice the exercise component of yoga as an aid to healthy living, and variations like yoga, qigong, tai chi, and other Eastern-influenced movement and body posture practices can help us get in condition for coping with stressful times. And finally, Z, for zealots, a word from the Greek meaning to be enthusiastic. The word has evolved to refer to extreme radical religious groups or individuals. So I close this alphabet of spiritual tools with zealot, because even though zebras are wonderful spiritual guides, I doubt that you see very many here around Hayward. The word zealot can remind us of what not to become. We learn to moderate our impulses, strive for balance, and appreciate that no single path or spiritual tool is in itself the answer. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King once wrote about Mother Pollard, an elderly African-American woman who took part in the 10-year civil rights bus boycott in Montgomery, Alabama during the 1950s and 60s. And having walked great distances each day for many weeks, Mother Pollard was asked if she was tired, and she answered with exquisite, simple profundity, "My feet is tired, but my soul is rested." So no matter how tired you are, how troubled and vulnerable you feel, how long the journey ahead of you, know that there are many spiritual tools to help cushion the impact, to help you push through to better days and the hope of returning light. May it be so, and amen.